Chapter 7. Either Or. Smoke trailed the battlefield, leaning against the wind, heady with the scent of death. The outpost had been well sacked. A broken crate crunched underfoot, and the warrior looked down to investigate. Bolt clips, sickle magazines, an entire case of them gone.
"Not quite," he muttered,
stooping to retrieve an errant shell missed in the thief's apparent hurry.
"You forgot this one."
Rising, he tucked it into a belt pouch and carried on.
"Tell me again, Kyson," said the warrior. "Once was not enough,"
asked Kyson Cybale, but took the data slate from his belt.
"Humour me,"
said the warrior, having stopped before the yawning gates of the Primus camp.
"Very well."
They stepped through together, an honour guard behind them, silent but for their growling warplate. The breach still burned, though the flames lapped gently, rather than devoured now.
"Looks like a blasting charge," said the warrior,
running a gauntleted hand against the toothy hole in the camp's overwhelmed defences.
"Several charges," he mused, allowing a humourless smile.
Cybale, a sergeant armoured in grimy sea green, began.
"Senthis, a refuelling station, lightly defended. Carabon 6, remote deep void auger. Minimal Legiones Astartes presence. Vartak, shell manufactory, protected by thralled mechanicum helots. The Ardunark supply line, the Veniskai supply line. Augment and Amulant asteroid depots."
He paused to look up from the slate. The data screen still had many more screens to spool through.
"Need I go on?"
"Yes, Kyson," said the warrior. "Continue."
He did, and the relentless report of guerrilla engagements, sabotage missions, infiltrations, feints, hit-and-run attacks, and carefully planned ambuscades became a background drone as the small party toured the carnage. The entire camp, almost the entire camp, the warrior reminded himself, had been stripped of weapons, ammunition, and war material. Even most of the tanks had been taken, and what they could not carry, the thieves had spiked. Corpses of vehicles reduced to empty black shells still drooled smoke in some quarters. Bodies remained too, but, the warrior noted, remained unmarked by anything other than their death wounds. Mutilation as an act of revenge or petty spite, or just the cathartic release of anger, had become commonplace.
"So he still has honour, then?"
"No survivors, though."
"He is ruthless, too."
The thought provoked another smile on a face ill-suited to mirth. A pugilist's face. A ganger's face. Hair shorn down to the scalp.
"And Hamart 3,
Cybale concluded, angry breaths soaring through his gritted teeth.
"Am I to recite the full and complete works of the dramaturgs of old Albion next? Marlowe or Shakespeare?"
The warrior laughed, a deep throaty reverberation thick with Chthonian menace. It was a gutter tongue in many ways, bred to be hard, evolved to be forbidding.
"The losses," replied the warrior
when he had done with Cybele's questionable wit.
"Give me those next."
Another data screed, the same slate, and Cybele began a second recitation as the war party slowly made its way to the core of Primus Camp. The tally of men and materiel continued as they entered a municipal building, partially fortified, its barricades scattered and broken with the force of an overwhelming insertion. The warrior looked up at the shattered ceiling, the dull light bleeding in from the outside, together with the faintest stirrings of rain. By the time they reached the body of Carbron Velks, it was pouring. It tinkled against metal armour plate, almost tuneful, utterly unremitting. Some of the dirt fallen on the warrior's armour had washed clean, revealing kill markings. Sea-green paint emerged, worn down to gunmetal grey in places. Rivulets ran down a stylized eye engraved into the breastplate. The rain couldn't do much about the craters and gouges in both the warrior's greaves and pauldrons, though.
"Seems they got to Velks," he said idly.
He almost heard the raised eyebrow in Cybele's reply.
"What makes you say that?"
The warrior turned to regard him.
"Flippant today, aren't you, Kyson? Why do they always cut off our heads, brother? I wonder if it's some petty act of retribution."
"I'm wondering why we are here, Captain,"
answered Cybale.
Oh, I see, said the warrior, their captain,
and gestured to one of his hulking honour guard, a company champion who had yet to loosen his grip on a deadly mortuary sword.
Sion, if you wouldn't mind.
The warrior glanced at a vault sunk into the floor of the half-destroyed building. Sion Azadine nodded curtly and swept the sword from its sheath to split the vault lid in two.
Empty, Captain,
he said in a grating voice, made grittier by his helm.
You're grinning, Ma, said Cybale. Why are you grinning? That bastard Medjuson has taken everything.
Tybalt Marr nodded. As the captain reached out, he took his proffered helm from one of the silent honour guard.
He has,
said Marr, donning the helm. The transverse crest sat proud across the crown.
Indeed he has.
They did not linger after that. The small war party, just a handful of the Sons of Horus, left Hamart III to burn. A prowling stormbird came to retrieve them, its hot jet wash stirring the reek of slow decay that had settled on the ransacked supply dump. From there, the Lupercal Pursuivant beckoned. Throughout transit, Tybalt Marr grinned to himself.
Yes, he thought. Medjuson has taken everything.
We cannot do both, said Kernak flatly.
His words echoed around the sepulchral chamber, one of old Nerevorn. A shrine built to honour the dead of Nerevorn's wars, it had, ironically, survived the world's annihilation. No use in killing what has already died. Ranks of tombs lined the walls, one upon the next, stretching all the way to a vaulted dome ceiling. Constellations had been painted across it, truly artisanal, but faded with age and neglect. No one lived to restore them now, and so they would diminish into obscurity and extinction, just like the rest of Nerevorn, and without a single blow struck. A statue, exquisitely detailed and three times the height of the Iron Fathers, stood in the middle of the mortuary chamber, a broad circle of flagstones radiating around it, creating a communal plaza. Whether it depicted a general, a politico, or an artist was no longer clear. The man's life, celebrated in dark marble, had become as irrelevant as the death of his civilization. Like so much else in the galaxy, war had erased it.
We cannot do both,
Kernag repeated, a strong and certain determination in his eyes. He and his cohorts stood in the shadow of the statue, on one side of the plaza. Their voices carried outwards and upwards across the shrine, the only structure on a remote moon with an atmosphere dense enough to support life. Too small for any other use, its purpose had been given over to that of a mausoleum.
Either we serve Medjuson's vainglory or we pledge for the Legion's survival,
Norsen agreed, his voice affected by the ever-present undertow of cold anger.
This Shadrach Smith does not speak for Medusa.
Rask Arkborn nodded, the implanted servos in his neck grinding noisily. He stifled a mechanized tremor in his damaged bionic arm, the effort visible on his severely battle-scarred face.
How can a Terran dictate our Legion's future? He said. His boldness is dangerously pugnacious.
His emotions and desires cloud his good sense,
said Rort, folding his powerful arms.
The flesh is weak, Freitas.
They nodded. This clandestine gathering, those whose battleships awaited the return of the escorts sent to retrieve them, a minor delay that would raise no suspicions.
The flesh is weak,
the others chorused, a grating monotone that spoke of cold, repressible logic.
What then can we do?
Asked another voice. And Jebez Org leaned forwards into the light. His form shimmered with projection distortion, the natural communications rebuff of the region fouling the hololithic link.
I share your concerns, Freitas. Shadrach Medjuson never wanted this burden. It has fallen to him, and I take a measure of responsibility for that. He finds himself in unfamiliar waters.
He is not nearly flesh-spare enough, said Arkborn,
his own misfiring bionics hardly a testament in favour of mechanised substitution.
If that could be remediated... I doubt he will submit to further augmentation without just cause,
said Norsen, fists clenched.
He won't,
Org agreed.
And even if he did, his humours run too hot these days. What is your belief then, Freighter?
Asked Kernag. Org's expression, his true expression, remained utterly cold.
But we must secede from the war. But to do that, Shadrach Midjusson must be overturned as war leader. If we are to survive as a legion, then that is our only logical course.
He turned to regard a looming shadow, a figure much larger than the others, sitting at the edge of the plaza next to the tombs. The figure did not move, but its armor and bionics gave off a low machine purr. A phalanx of silent immortals stood guard, also hidden in shadow.
Midjusson must embrace the way of the machine, affirmed Rort, or he must be removed, for the sake of the Iron Tenth. Is this the will of the Gorgon?
We are the Gorgon, said Org.
His cult, his machine cult. From flesh are stronger bonds formed in iron.
The immortals slammed down their breacher shields as one, raising a discordant chime. Kernag, Norsen, Rort, and Arkborn all turned, but it was Org who addressed the enthroned king in their midst.
Is this your will?
He said.
Is this the Gorgon's will?
The figure's right hand lifted slightly. One of the fingers was missing. The freighters took this as confirmation and bowed as one.